Dreamer's sending a message to Raven. It's going to take more than Raven. It's going to take more Spicoli to end Dreamer's dream. Tonight is Tommy Dreamer's night.
Ready to go inside the ropes like you've never been before and watch the most famous and infamous matches in wrestling history along with legends of the squared circle. Welcome to the first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Payoff.
EC Dub. Welcome to an all-new episode of The Payoff. This is Tom Healy, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Jeffrey Ryan. Jeff, as you know, buddy, I am a huge ECW mark, and I cannot wait for this week's show. This is going to be a fun one. But first, Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Another great week, I got to say. Crazy to think we've been doing this for a month and just continuing to grow every week. So it's awesome. So like you, I'm super excited to talk about this one. I was a little later enjoying Raven and was a bigger fan of WCW Raven. But you know, between the two of us, we can cover a lot of ground on Raven's career. So before I start, though, I got to say thank you to our listeners for tuning in. You know, don't forget to subscribe, give us 5 stars, tell your friends. We're continuing to grow every day, every week, and it's just fantastic to see. So you can always find The Payoff on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Payoff Pod. Tom is at Payoff Tom, and myself, I am at Payoff Jeff, and you can find us on Twitter. So Tom, what else do we need to tell all of our loyal listeners?
Yeah, man, just a huge thank you to all of our listeners around the world. You know, we're continuing to be blown away by all the support, and we truly appreciate your help in spreading the word, getting it out there, sharing things on social media, you know, all about what we're doing here at The Payoff. We're proud of the work we're putting in, but, you know, without listeners, the show probably won't last long, and without your support, we're not going to be able to get the word out there. So thank you so much. Now, for the past couple weeks, you know, Jeff and I have talked about launching a Patreon, and what we thought was, if we're going to do it, we have to do it right, and we have to make it awesome from day one. So, you know, the past couple weeks, we've rolled up our sleeves, we've really worked our asses off, and, you know, we feel like we've built something that you're going to really enjoy. So we're proud to announce our Patreon is now live at patreon.com/payoffpod. That's patreon.com/payoffpod. We have one tier. It's $10 a month, and we're going to hit our loyal listeners with the following. We have a weekly The After Show, which is an ad-free after show, you guessed it, where Jeff and I continue talking about the match, the guests, and some other topics. And we really get to do a deep dive, kind of unscripted, just talking about a bunch of fun stuff. So I think you're really going to enjoy that. We also have a monthly bonus match. So once a month, we're going to interview a superstar legend. It's an episode that wasn't featured on The Payoff. Similar format, we're going to play the match, and then we're going to talk about the match. And the really cool thing is we're going to answer any of your questions. Now, you're going to know the match ahead of time because you're the ones that are going to pick the bonus match. Each month we'll have a poll and you'll pick the bonus match you want Jeff and I to cover and let us know what questions you want us to answer. We're also going to give you weekly transcripts of The Payoff. We also have a weekly a Payoff community where you're going to have access to all the other Patreon members. We're going to be in there talking to you. It's really cool, very interactive. And then finally, we're going to give you an on-air thank you on our after show for being a payoff patron. So thank you so much for those of you that are going to do that and support us. You know, if it seems like something you'll enjoy, we would really appreciate the support. All of the money that we make from that goes straight back into the show. That's to bring you the best matches and the best guests as possible. So if you're interested, patreon.com/payoffpod, we would love to have you there, and thank you in advance for supporting the show. So Jeff, quickly, for those that are new to the payoff, can you walk everyone through how we do things around here?
Yeah, of course. So we give you a weekly deep dive into a match every Monday, and it's broken into three parts. Part one is the build. We lay the foundation of what got us to the match, what was going on in the business, and anything else that you'll find interesting. Part two is the payoff, where we watch the match along with a legend or superstar of the business. Finally, part three is the aftermath, where we talk about what happened after the finish of the match, share how it was received by the wrestling community, and just provide our own thoughts on the match. So now that we've been bringing you the payoff for a month, we've got a great archive of past episodes. So Tom, you want to walk our listeners through, you know, what we have available, and then just get us right into why we picked this match.
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of stuff in the archives, and I'll just quickly give you an idea what's in there. We have that Eddie Brock title match. Vicky Guerrero was our guest. Phenomenal. Judy Bagwell in a pole with Buff Bagwell is our guest. Then the classic Magnum TA, Tully Blanchard, I Quit Steel Cage match. Magnum TA was our guest for that one. He was fantastic. Pillman and Liger, Super Brawl 2 back in 1992. Watch that along with Brian Pillman Jr., which was really interesting. So a lot of good stuff in the archives. We're obviously adding to it each Monday with new episodes. So that leads us into today's episode. Here we are, Jeff. You know, each week you and I debate what the episode's going to be, right? We have some different matches to choose from. We go back and forth. We look at historical dates. We look at past episodes, some of the other things that we have slated. And, you know, ultimately we decided to go with the payoff to an incredible ECW feud, Raven and Tommy Dreamer. Now, for me, I wanted this one because I love the classic ECW matches, and I believe a lot of the great storytelling that they used to do is what's missing in today's wrestling product. So I am pumped up for us to talk about everything that led up to this match, then the actual match, and of course the aftermath. So Jeff, why did you want to do this match?
Yeah, mainly because we hadn't done an ECW match yet, and I wanted something different. You got two guys that were just at the top of their game for this match. I said it before, too, that I love a long build, and this was like the longest build for ECW. It's just, it's definitely one of the longest ones we've discussed on the show. It just took, you know, the build was fantastic, and so I don't want to wait any more time. So with that being said, let's get to the build.
All right, here we are. Let us set the stage for you. ECW Wrestlepalooza 1997. Now, this was a big ECW show. However, it didn't air on pay-per-view. It was just kind of like a super house show where they would film it and they'd release it and they'd use it on their TV show. But it was actually in between the first and the second pay-per-view. So still a really big show. It's June 7th, 1997. We're at the ECW Arena in South Philly. There's a sellout crowd. I've seen 1,250. I've seen 1,350. I'm sure they didn't even know how many people got into that building some nights, but they're all jammed into the arena. Now, it was a June summer night, but it was actually uncharacteristically cold that night, only 61 degrees. I know how hot that building used to get. So I actually went back and looked, thinking maybe it was a really hot night, but nice cool night in Philadelphia. So main event of this show was actually the Eliminators defeating the Dudley Boys. Now, I was a major Eliminators mark. I thought they were phenomenal. They had one of the best tag finishers that I've ever seen, Total Elimination. So that was a great match where you know, they retained the tag titles. We also had Sabu and Taz on this show. We had Terry Funk defending his newly won World Heavyweight Championship against Chris Candido. Then we had Taz in an impromptu match against Shane Douglas for his World Heavyweight title, which ended up, I'm sorry, his television title, which ended up ending his nearly year-long reign. So bunch of stuff going on in this show. And that's not even talking about, you know, in some cases, what some would say was the main event, which is this Raven Tommy Dreamer match we're going to talk about. So some other things going on in the business at the time. For those of you that remember, ECW really had to fight, scratch, and claw to get onto pay-per-view. And so even at this time, after they had done their first pay-per-view, they're fighting with all these cable companies trying to get back on pay-per-view for their summer show, and then again for their third pay-per-view in November. So that was in the midst of this battle. You know, some people thought it was too violent. Then, you know, there was some talk that maybe WCW was lobbying against them, trying to leverage their power with the pay-per-view company. So real messy situation, but that was going on. Now, interestingly enough, you know, we think of ECW being pretty chaotic, but for at least 1 week only, they probably had the least chaotic locker room of the three major promotions at the time. So before Raw, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart get into a fight in a bathroom in Hartford, Connecticut. This is the famous one where Bret ended up with a clump of HBK's hair in his hand. Now, meanwhile, the same night, Boston, Massachusetts, Nitro, after that show, Kevin Nash and Roddy Piper get into a locker room fight. This is funny because the ECW 900 line was plugging that they were going to give the behind-the-scenes information on these fights. So they talk about the Michaels-Bret fight. They talk about how Michaels quit WWF, and then they talk about this Nash and Piper fight as well. Now, Jeff, have you ever called into a wrestling 900 line before?
I cannot say I have.
Okay. I only did once. It's actually for an angle that we're going to discuss on a future episode. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
I have a guess, but we'll see what you come up with.
All right. I mean, it's embarrassing. When we get to the episode, I'll share it. But the only time I ever called 900 line was the WWF one. Probably, I don't know what, 6, 10, 12 bucks that I rang up on the number. But yeah, so that's ECW's getting some mileage out of these two locker room fights. The last thing that just, you know, I came across in my research was this was the same week that Mick Foley gave the final installment of those like really weird Mankind interviews with Jim Ross. And the reason I share this is because there was just so much going on in the business at this time. You know, we think like things are hectic right now in today's like wrestling environment. Can you imagine back then you had WWF, WCW, ECW, you still had some territories around. You had all these guys jumping around to different promotions, like surprises popping up all the time. I mean, I can't imagine what social media would have been like then. It's hard enough to keep up with the product now. So really, really fun time in the business here in 1997. Now, each week, Jeff, you do a great job of walking us through the build to the match from a storyline standpoint. So how did we get to Raven Dreamer Loser Leaves Town match here at ECW WrestlePalooza 1997?
Yeah, I want everyone to keep in mind that this match eventually took place in June of 1997. Tommy Dreamer and Raven, their feud began after Raven made his ECW debut on January 10th, 95. So from his debut on ECW Hardcore TV, the build was almost 2.5 years long, which it's hard to even imagine that nowadays. There were some great matches along the way, but we're going to take this from the first ECW pay-per-view, which was barely legal, in April of 1997. So just a couple months before this match happened. Dreamer interfered in Raven's title defense of the World Heavyweight Championship against the number one contender, Terry Funk, which actually ended up costing Raven the title. On ECW Hardcore TV the following week, Raven convinced Stevie Richards to reunite with him as a former member of the Raven's Nest. They wanted to go after Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer together. So Dreamer kept bothering Raven and kept him from winning the title back by just interfering in his matches. Raven and Richards would eventually go on to beat Funk and Dreamer in a tag match. And so little side note on Stevie Richards, he was supposed to get a title shot against Terry Funk on this card, but it was switched to Chris Candido because of a neck injury which Richards previously sustained. It looks like it was, you know, legit in that storyline, but we'll just have to get him on and talk to him about it. So back to Raven and Dreamer, though, on the May 29th episode of Hardcore TV, so just a little bit before the actual match, it became official that Tommy Dreamer and Raven would compete at WrestlePalooza in a Loser Leaves Town match. So this stipulation had been around for a while. It wasn't the first time something like this was done, but there was a lot more happening behind the scenes. Like, most importantly, the fact that word was spreading that Raven was leaving ECW for WCW. So we'll get into that a little bit more later, but Tom, a lot happening not only on screen, but maybe even more behind the scenes. And so what other thoughts do you have?
Yeah, great stuff on the build. You know, just a few other notes that I wanted to share. You know, first of all, I just love this, you know, Raven character. I was a little scared of him as a 12-year-old kid. Certainly intimidated the hell out of me, but he just played this character so well. And it's hard to believe that, you know, a few years prior to this, he's Johnny Polo working in the WWF, doing commentary with Vince McMahon, and working in the front offices every day in a suit and tie. Just crazy to think about. And then all of a sudden, here we are where he transforms into this just unbelievable character. Now, as far as the build that you laid out, Jeff, I just think that these long builds were incredible. You know, this one was executed flawlessly. And even a mediocre build is still better than nothing at all. But the ECW faithful were such a hardcore fan base. So for them to live through this build over multiple years, it just made this night really special to watch. So here we go. Each week, we give you the timestamp if you'd like to watch the match along with our special guest. You know, if you're in the car, at the gym, or at work, you can always go back and watch it later. But if you want to watch the match along with Raven and hear his really interesting insight on the match, go to the WWE Network, find ECW Hardcore TV from June 10th, 1997. And when we come back from break, you're going to hit play at the 8-minute mark on the nose. So when you hear the ding, ding, ding following our break, you're going to hit play on ECW Hardcore TV, June 10th, 1997, at the 8-minute mark on the nose. So here we go. It's time for The Payoff. All right, we're here with Raven. We've got the one of the best rivalries I remember growing up, Raven Tommy Dreamer. This one's from WrestlePalooza 97. Tell us about the relationship with Dreamer, this feud. Just fill us in on all of this because it's great stuff.
Well, here we are in the ring. It's me, Chastity, and Lupus, the booger-picking moron. And that's a name I got from the original Bad News Bears movie. There was a guy, Lupus, the booger-picking moron. And I found this guy in the indies, and he was dressed just like me. And I'm like, man, I go, you know, that's kind of gimmick infringement. He's like, no, I've been wearing it before you did, believe it or not. I'm like, really? It's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, you want a job with the ECW? I'll get you a job. And so I brought him in. So it's, and he always carried around a blow-up fuck doll with him. It's hilarious. Like, the Disco Inferno goes to me one time. We were in a locker room getting ready for matches, some indie show, and Lupus was with me, and Lupus is blowing up the fuck doll. He's like, yeah, can you imagine Lou Thez walked in the locker room and Lupus is blowing up a fuck doll?
So they're chanting, you sold out before the match. Did you care? Did it bother you at all?
No, because, you know, they're fans. I mean, you know, they feel like everybody sold out, you know. I didn't care. Plus, I'm a heel. I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah. So when did you contact WCW or they contact you? How did all that happen, and when did you know you were leaving?
I don't remember. And probably, and well before this match, I knew I was leaving. Me and Dreamer, before the match, I'm like, I don't think I should lose. He's like, neither do I. He goes, you'll be back. I go, I know I'll be back. I'll be back sometime. And Paulie was like, no, Dreamer has to win. And we both understood it, but I was really bummed out. So was Dreamer, because we really wanted to leave the story open-ended that, holy shit, Dreamer doesn't win, you know?
How great that's a good point. That's a good point. That would have been phenomenal if you would have actually won this.
I understood Paulie's point entirely. You know, he's got to protect his star, you know, because I'm not going to be there anymore. So I got to put him over on the way out.
So why'd you go to WCW?
Because they offered me a lot more money.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you know, and they're at a bigger stage, you know, and it was time for a change, you know, just time to go someplace else. You know, it's funny. ECW got even bigger after this, but they weren't as influential any longer. Like after the first pay-per-view, like their influence had started, was already so much of the ECW style was taken by WCW and WWE that their influence, you know, waned on the business even as they were growing bigger than ever.
What was your relationship?
Some fans got a sign that says, I never saw this, it says, this match don't count.
What was your relationship like with Dreamer?
Well, we got along really well. You know, I drove him nuts, and you know, and he was nuts anyway, so it worked out perfect.
This was a hell of a match, by the way. I'm guessing you haven't seen this in a long time.
I don't even know if I'm sure I must have watched it at least once, but I don't remember it. I just piled drove Dreamer off of a bunch of off of something. Yeah, Dreamer became he became an amazing seller. Like, what I hate about his selling now is now he's so good at it that he's become more caricature of himself selling. Like, because he knows all the shortcuts, and that's what he ends up doing. But man, back then he was so amazing. Like, he sold. And he would always trust me. I would tell him, Dreamer, I go, I got an idea. Let's do it this way. And 9 times out of 10, it was good. And every 1 out of 10, it sucked horribly. But I always took that. But I was like, look, I'll take responsibility if we get heat for it, you know. But he was always willing to trust me because, you know, I've been working a hell of a lot longer than he had at that point, you know. But he was great to work with. I really loved working with him. You know, he was just unhurtable, you know, or if he got hurt, he just played right through it. He was tough as shit. He was up for anything. He was ballsy, you know, and he really became a great babyface, you know. Shane and Francine are watching from the crow's nest.
How was your relationship with Paul at this time?
Oh, horrible. Oh, Paulie hated me for leaving. And I was like, which was really unfair because I told Paul, I go, just offer me a raise and I'll stay. I wanted to stay. I didn't want to go. And that's right. I didn't want to go, but he couldn't offer me even the slightest bit of a raise, you know, to make it even relatively close or even, to be honest, I don't think I was making that much here. I think I was making really little. I was because I didn't make a lot more until the next when I came back. But yeah, I was telling Paul, I go, offer me anything, any kind of raise, I'll stay. But he couldn't do it. The budget was so tight. So he really hated me for a long time. Like he wouldn't talk. He barely talked to me. You know what I mean? Like when I was in WWE with him, when he went there later, like he would say 2 words to me and then he'd walk off. But eventually, somehow, I think I persevered and patched it up. Because I always spoke so highly of him, but I meant it. You know, I would never say it if I didn't mean it. And Paulie was a genius. You know, he was a creative wrestling savant. He understood, like he was notorious, you know, famous for half-truths, so to speak. But he would never lie to the fans. Because you can't lie to the fans. Because you lie to the fans about stipulations or whatever, and you're just going to lose audience.
How do you want fans to remember you?
As creatively unique. As an original character, like as maybe the only three-dimensional character in wrestling, you know, because everybody else is pretty much two-dimensional, you know. But I always believe that a character should be, you should be able to know what the character is going to do or say in a situation. Like, you know, it's like whenever I'd work with Shane Douglas, you know, he'd go, the franchise wouldn't do that. And I like that. Most guys get upset at that, going, oh, what a mark for his character. I'm like, no, that means he knows his character. You know, you may not agree with whether the franchise would or wouldn't do that, but I want a guy who knows what his character would and wouldn't do because it makes it so much easier to work with. Jimmy bulldogging me on the floor. Me gigging myself just there. I had so much fun working with him. Me gigging myself some more.
Where'd you have it? In your tape, in your wrist?
I pulled it out of my wrist and just held it between my thumb and forefinger. If you ever see my thumb and forefinger together, I'm holding a blade in it. Now back out into the crowd some more. You know, this kind of got played out, the fighting in the stands. But this was still when it was still, you know, wild, crazy, you know, where the fans looked forward to it, to fighting in the crowd. You know, but it did get played out after a little while. But only because guys wouldn't be creative, you know. Like, one time I brought a kitchen sink. I had a kitchen sink set up in the back so Dreamer could hit me with everything and a kitchen sink, you know. I just always believe that the problem with wrestling is, or for a long time, was guys would do the same old thing. They'd see it work for somebody else, so they would do it, and they wouldn't put their own spin on it. Here we are fighting up a ladder to go somewhere. I don't know where we're going.
Well, if you were in a real fight, somebody would take you up a ladder?
Yeah, of course.
Oh.
I just gave Dreamer a splash onto a speaker.
Did you love working there in the arena?
Yeah, I loved it. You know what's funny is most of the boys hated it when I got there. They hated it because the fans were so fickle because they would boo the baby faces and cheer the heels. And the fans were so fickle that I remember in the back, the boys were like, man, I hate working the arena shows. You know, now everybody remembers it as a love fest.
Yeah.
But it ended up becoming one, you know, when the fans got, you know, behind the faces and the heels. But originally it wasn't, man. The boys, I remember when I first started there, the boys would complain and they'd go, oh, man, you're going to hate it there. And I thought, no, I'm going to love it. Because the fans were so smart to the business that they saw through the regular bullshit. And I'm like, this is great. Because if they see through it, they're going to know when A and B happens that C is going to follow. Except I'm going to not do C. I'm going to do A, B, and C. But he's going to kick out on C and I'm going to go to D. But they're never going to see that because they think they're so smart. They know what the play is. So it's always fun to outthink them.
Did you have a favorite guy ever to work with?
Yeah. Dreamer. Sandman for storylines and just incredible for just, you know, a regular, you know, and no dreamers for a match with no, you know, stipulations, no angle, no heat, no nothing, just a regular match. But my favorite is Dreamer and Sandman.
When you mentioned credible, his stuff, you know, I guess a few years after this match was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Right before you guys went out of business, you know, around that 2001 time, he was doing some great stuff.
I just punched Dreamer in the nads. That's always fun. One time he hit me in the nads with a VCR, and then I think he threw the remote and hit me in the face with it, the bastard.
Hey, a guy I want to ask you about, Marty Jannetty. You guys were pretty close, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, tell the fans about him, because in my mind, he's just one of those guys that he was a hell of a worker. If some things would have gone better for him, he would have been a big-time star. I mean, do you agree with that? Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, he just disappeared. When him and Sean broke up, it was like, he just, I don't know what happened. Like, I mean, I know what happened, how they broke up and all that, but I'm saying, but the, I just got hit in the nuts.
Watch this. This is good right here.
Yeah, Dreamer loves to squash things with his fat body.
Yeah.
And what a sell. Do you see him selling?
Oh, yeah.
And see, he's still going to sell. Like, that's another thing guys don't do, is they don't sell after the fact. You know, they'll sell, and then all of a sudden, it's my turn, and they pop right back up. He never does that. Yeah, I got nothing but good things to say about his work. And his butt crack never hardly ever came out either, so that was impressive. This is a nice spot. I think, I don't know if this is the first time we did it, or he pulls out a sign from the audience and hits me with it. Oh, no, we've done it before, because I grabbed it and we hit the ref with it.
Oh.
And it's a stop sign inside the paper outline.
Do you cringe when you see those headshots now?
No. Oh. Not for pots and pans and stuff like that. Chair shots, yeah. But there's also an art form to taking a chair shot, and there's an art form to giving it, you know? First of all, you don't have to swing like Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten did, you know, for the fences. That's just ridiculous. You know, there's a way to work throw it, the way to work throw a chair shot. And there's also, if you're working with a guy who knows how to throw, and you can time it and bump as he's hitting you. So it makes enough hit just to make a sound, but you're not really catching the full brunt of it because you're already going down.
Yeah.
But that's an art. I mean, it's hard. It's not easy. Bueller just hit the DDT, the Lupus, the Booger, picking moron. I just did a schoolboy dreamer with a handful of tights. Ooh, almost so close. Look at Bueller. Great facials.
Yeah, she was fantastic.
Yeah, she really was.
All the women in ECW were, and they were certainly good sports.
I just got nutted and rolled up by Dreamer. Chastity jumps in the ring. Hairspray Dreamer. Dropkick by me. Holy crap. Yeah, I always wondered what's so hard about a dropkick. Like, the dropkicks always seemed easy to me, but I don't know. Bueller went to throw Chastity down. They didn't go. Now they're both down. The only thing I hated about the cat fight is it was instinctual to just roll. I'm like, don't roll. Choke one. You know, one of you get the advantage and start choking the other one, you know, instead of just rolling back and forth.
I don't know what was said on commentary during this, but they literally bleeped out about 20 seconds on the WWE Network, so it must have been pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, Bueller just nutted me. And I'm getting a lot of nut shots. DDT on the do not enter sign. 1, 2. Kick out. Ah. Boo.
I love watching these on silent just to watch the fans. I mean, it's just, they're going nuts.
Yeah.
This.
Now we squished the ref. John Finnegan was an amazing ref.
I think he was the only ref you guys had.
No, we had Jim Molyneux too.
Yeah, that's
right. He was really good, but Finnegan was my favorite. Finnegan was... Like, man, the only problem with Finnegan was he was so big.
Yeah.
Spicoli comes in now to start his angle with Dreamer. He gives him a Spicoli driver. He DDTs him. He throws me on top. Yay, thank you, Spicoli. He pulls the ref over, get the count. 1, 2. And I always told Finnegan on spots like that to count a little faster, just a little bit. You know, and now he's going for a Spicoli driver. Dreamer gets out of it and DDTs Spicoli. Anyway, but I would tell him to count a little faster, and then I just DDT Dreamer and the DDT on the other side. 1, 2, people were pop. People were so sad that I didn't. They were so happy that I didn't win that.
You should have won this. It would have just. I mean, they would have just been dead silent.
It would have been so great
because you would have completely worked them. They assumed they knew what was going on.
Now I get Death Valley Driver on the do not enter sign. I think.
Oh. He got you pretty good there.
Yeah, that's really one of the softest landing bumps, believe it or not. It looks like your head gets compacted, but he loosens up at the last second, so it really doesn't. But, Finnegan, So I would tell them to count a little faster on the false, on the really strong false finishes, you know, really, because the people would think, because the referees instinctively count a little harder and a little faster when the, when it's the finish. Have you noticed that?
Oh yeah, of course.
Think about it. I mean, you wouldn't normally think of that, but it's true. Referees always tend to count a little harder and a little faster on the finish. So, and the fans may not realize that, but they can feel it. So what I would do is I would, on key spots, I would tell them to count a little harder and a little faster, even though I'm kicking out, just to give it the, oh my, so it gives even more of an illusion of a false finish. So Dreamer wins. Yay. People are happy. Yay. Dreamer's happy. He's actually kind of sad. He wanted me to win. Spicoli's over there selling. Did you see Spicoli roll over the referee doing the Bob and Doug McKenzie steamroller?
No, I missed it. That's great.
Spicoli was getting to the other side of the other back corner. He just rolled like a little fat kid rolling over the referee. RVD just did the dropkick chair shot.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this whole sequence. It's pretty good.
Not dropkick chair shot. He threw the chair and Dreamer caught it and he kicked it. I mean, yeah. Man, RVD was so amazingly athletic.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I remember, I can't remember what pay-per-view it was, but one of the pay-per-views, a couple guys canceled or injuries or whatever it was, and they just said, hey, you know, we're going to do the best we can, and they put him and Lynn out there last with nothing at stake, and they just stole the show for about 25 minutes. As a fan, like, RVD was so good that if you gave him 25 minutes, you didn't care that two guys no-showed.
Well, I always found that, like, I didn't want it to happen, but when things would, so now I'm going to defend Dreamer. Forget it. So no, I push Sabu and RVD away.
You're gone. Yeah. You just walk away and that's it.
Yeah.
Head off into the sunset.
Walking into history, or really into WCW, right? Same thing. Lights out again. And Paulie's trying to build this as much up as he can because he wants them to remember the win, but forget about Raven now. Now it's time to forget about Raven, and he brings in Lawler, I think. But I know what I was saying. So sometimes when things screw up, it makes the best stuff. Because you have to be super creative to cover it or to think of something better. You know what I mean? So it's not that I want this stuff to not screw up or people not to show up or anything like that. But when they do, it forces you to either elevate somebody else or thinks outside the box. You'd be surprised some of the best stuff has happened because guys said they're not coming or guys were no showing or, you know, in a short notice would happen. You know what I mean? And now everybody's turned into a big brawl. RVD and Sabu are cleaning house.
I'm surprised someone didn't attack Lawler. I mean, he was so good in that role when he was doing this in the arena.
Lawler is actually my favorite worker of all time.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's the best worker I've ever seen. I mean, not that you would know it from now, but if you saw his Memphis stuff, holy shit, he was a good worker. I mean, he's the best worker I've ever seen, literally. The stuff he would come up with. I mean, just one example of how brilliant Lawler was he did a thing on Raw where he was working Razor Ramon. Razor Ramon shot the toothpick at him,
yeah.
And Lawler went down, and all of a sudden he's holding his eye. They cut to him. He's got the toothpick, and he's holding it in his eye like a toothpick went in his eye. So brilliant. You know, and he milked it for 5 minutes, better than watching a match between the two, you know, because it's so much more interesting. Holy shit.
Yeah, the stuff he did with, like, Bret Hart's family, I know it wasn't the prime and in Memphis, but, I mean, growing up as a kid, I mean, that stuff was phenomenal. Just his mic work in that era.
It was amazing. The King was the best. He's the best. The funny thing is, one time we was working, where I was working in Memphis. He was working as a – he's always a babyface in Memphis. But he had to be a heel because he was working a Macho Man. And so he went to pull the strap down to make the Superman comeback, and he took a face bump.
I heard his stuff with Savage was really good.
Yeah. So Sabu and RVD and Draw and Lawler are still cleaning house. Fonzie's blowing the whistle. Fonzie's amazing. Spicoli holding Beulah in the corner to make her watch to beat down on Dreamer. That's a nice little touch.
Yeah, they're going crazy. Good ending.
Yeah, but look at the little touch, though, they had. With Spicoli holding Beulah in the corner to make her watch. Now the gangsters are out. Get them in.
This is good stuff.
Lawler insulting the fans, probably, and Dreamer on the mic.
Well, appreciate you watching this match with us. This was great.
Not a problem, man.
Appreciate having you here on The Payoff.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So as always, I want to thank Raven for taking the time to talk with us. We know he's a super busy guy. He has his own show. So it was super cool of him to take the time and chat with us. We've got some future episodes in the pipeline with him that I know people are going to be extremely happy about. So Tom, hints aside, what were your initial thoughts on the payoff?
Dude, Raven was fantastic. I mean, we've had some awesome guests and he is right up there. He was great. You know, I mentioned it earlier, but he definitely disturbed me as a kid. And he was so good about keeping kayfabe that I legitimately thought he was just like a complete asshole. Turns out he's a brilliant guy and he's super nice, generous with his time, generous with his insight. And I cannot wait to have him back here on the payoff. So let's talk about the match. Let me run through some of my takeaways. First, Raven was this really odd, strange thing in wrestling that's almost extinct these days. Do you know what that's called, Jeff?
What do you got?
It's called a heel, okay? The crowd hated him. His nuances were incredible. As he has said in some different interviews, he was a chicken shit heel. You know, interestingly enough, this is a time where being a heel started to be cool. So the lines were blurred. Steve Austin was becoming a good guy. The NWO was being cheered. And no one was really hated anymore. I won't say that Raven was like the last true heel in any major promotion. But I will say he's one of the few true heels that I can think of over the past 20 years. Being a heel is a lost art, but Raven did it so incredibly well at this point, which I thought it added a ton to the match. And that's something I want to talk to you about on our after show today, Jeff, is just that art of being a heel. So speaking of the angle after the match, I have no idea what this is called from a storyline standpoint. I'm sure that, you know, writers have a name for it, but I loved anytime Paul Heyman would run these continuously flowing angles in matches after ECW shows, right? So, or during them. So like everything just kept flowing into each other and you'd seamlessly go from a match to an angle, to another match, to another angle. And at the end of it, you'd have this like 45 to 60 minute window during an ECW show that was just like off the charts incredible. And they did it here with this Raven Dreamer match because then they have the angle with all the run-ins. Then Taz comes out and it just kept flowing and it was awesome. Another thing, Jeff, Rick Rude on commentary. Come on, man. I was a huge fan of his. He's one of the best heels in the history of the business. If you don't believe me or you don't know much about Rick Rude, go watch his old promos. The guy was incredible. And, you know, he had a couple comments that the network bleeped out, including a 20-second bleep out. That's pretty long for a bleep out during the cat fight. So I'd love to know what he was saying. Maybe we'll be able to dig it up somewhere on the internet. And just another fun fact from the match, Rodney Pete and Jim Everett, who are football players, right? They're guests of ECW at this show. They did not endear themselves to ECW because they were pouring beer on Tommy Dreamer as he was climbing the ladder during the match. So just a little trivia there for you. So, Jeff, that's all I dug up, man. What do you have about the payoff?
Yeah, I had seen this match just a long time ago and knew the story of Raven leaving, but just hadn't sat down to watch the match in years. This was brutal. I didn't follow ECW as closely as you used to, but I thoroughly enjoyed them just weaving through the crowd and just old school brawl with every weapon they could find. Like, you just don't see that as much anymore to this degree at all, at least not on, like, you know, the big shows. But this to me was classic ECW, and it was great. I got to say, too, the crowd heat is just incredible. And I can't think of any other time when it was just that nuclear and hot toward someone. You know, I said it previously that I try and put myself in the time frame when I go back and watch these matches and what was happening. And it wasn't just Raven versus Dreamer. For a lot of people, it was WCW versus ECW. I was reading one article that said, I'll quote it, it said, Dreamer theoretically represented ECW by killing off the enemy, WCW. Pretty strong to put it, but that was the reality. And that's what the level of heat that people thought that this deserved. And so this was the reality when this match happened. So Tom, I know you got a lot of thoughts for the aftermath, so we'll just keep this moving. What else you got?
Yeah, dude, this was war back then. You know, that's what people may forget, or those that didn't live through it. It was a damn war. It was awesome. This is the type of match that we love here on The Payoff, because it has that build. It has that great storyline. It has the big blow-off match. There's interesting stories outside the ring, and then there's just some great stuff in the aftermath. So, you know, Jeff, walk everyone through, from a storyline standpoint, what the aftermath was to this match.
Yeah, this one got a little crazy. Tom, I know you want to talk about what happened in the ring, so I'll leave that to you for later. But Raven, he left town.
That's because the loser left town.
Exactly. And so the town was called ECW and relocated, found a new place in WCW. And so this show was on June 7th. And then on June 30th, he was front row of Nitro. So as we like to do around here for fun, I went back and watched this Nitro start to finish. I put myself through that for all of you. And he was introduced as, quote, "He doesn't work for World Championship Wrestling. He's been a champion for many organizations," end quote. I get why promotions do this, you know, and they have creative ways of calling out other promotions, but it's just hilarious to me because we know who they're talking about. And at the time, Raven was just huge. And so
that had to be a Tony Schiavone quote, right?
It actually was not Tony.
No. Who was it? Do you remember?
I forget. And so I know Bobby the Brain, he chimed in at some point.
He would have said something that dumb. He probably had something funny to say afterwards.
So Raven, though, he spent, you know, after this and he debuted, he spent a few years rebuilding the Raven's Nest, or as WCW called it, the Flock. He had various matches with really the entire roster, but Saturn, DDP, Goldberg, some of the big ones, very involved in some of the higher storylines throughout the, you know, before he left again, actually in 1999. And so the story is that he literally walked out of WCW, that Bischoff had put together a all talent kind of meeting backstage to discuss some things going on and threw it out there, and Raven just left. And so an interesting kind of thing with his contract apparently was that while he could not directly go to, at the time, WWF, WWE, he did, though, have a non-compete clause for that. He did not for ECW. So he walked out and then walked right back into ECW. So when he did come back, kind of a crazy twist, him and Tommy Dreamer actually won the tag team titles from the Dudley Boys, who, again, everybody moving this time, they were on their way to WWE. So Raven came back, paired with his longtime rival, Tommy Dreamer, to win the tag belts from the Dudleys, who were leaving to go to WWE. So a lot happening, but anything I missed on how the story played out after this match, Tom?
No, I'm just confused now. No, I'm just kidding. That was actually a killer angle, which we'll get to in here in a second. But what I can't believe from, you know, you walking us through that timeline is that WCW in August of 1999 was disorganized. That's really hard to believe.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
I know.
So I don't know how well you remember Raven coming back in 99 for that angle, but it was absolutely awesome. You know, there were certain surprises back then in the business that I don't know if we're ever going to see again, because, you know, now there's stricter contracts, there's 5-year contracts, these probably more buttoned up from a business standpoint. But back then, for a variety of reasons, disorganization and people walking out, and for all kinds of different reasons, you got treated to these surprise returns and jumps between companies that were just fantastic. And, you know, one of my all-time favorites was this night that not only does Raven return to ECW from WCW, but he wins the damn tag belts with Tommy Dreamer, which was one of his greatest rivals ever. And then a backdrop to all that, Jeff, like you said, is the fact that the Dudleys are leaving after this match, which the fans knew, to head up to Stanford. So they even sang Vince McMahon's favorite song, the Na 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 song, before the match. Now, after the match, Paul Heyman and the entire locker room come out and give this tremendous send-off to the Dudley Boys as Raven and Dreamer, the new tag champs. So really interesting set of events. And at the time, that was 1999 ECW. So they've got that TNN TV deal. They're desperately fighting to keep the company going. They think they're making strides to set the company up long term. So this angle really gave them a nice moment, a nice boost, and it was just fantastic. So if you haven't seen that in a while, go find it on YouTube. It's great. Now, I mentioned earlier, you know, the art of being a heel and the importance of heels in the business. Dude, Jerry Lawler in ECW Arena. Are you kidding me? I used to always love when ECW would turn off the lights. When Lawler comes out, I mean, that's what you call nuclear heat. He's running down ECW. You know, I was honestly surprised that nobody ran into the ring and physically attacked Lawler. I mean, that's how hated he was. That's how big of a heel he was in the ECW arena. And he was just so good in this role at this time. So this whole RVD, Sabu, being kind of tied in with the WWF at this stage, you know, this is a severely underrated angle. You need to check it out. I hope we can somehow cover this on the payoff because it's that good. And I think to a certain degree at this time, you know, the business had so much going on that sometimes things like this angle might get a little bit lost in the shuffle, but that's why you have Jeff and I here to dig up these things, find them, and work them into the shows. So I loved when Lawler asked, is this all you got? It was just great stuff. And, you know, the other thing, and I saw this in the Torch, and I want to read this because I think it's really good. Heyman believes the one-hour stretch of action at the ECW arena from Raven versus Dreamer to Sabu, Van Damme, Jerry Lawler, then to the Taz versus Sabu match and the Taz Douglas match was the best hour ECW has ever put on at a house show. And Heyman would say, if I had to show 1 hour of ECW to somebody who had never seen ECW before, that is the 1 hour I would show them to express what we are all about. Now, the overall event, Heyman said, we hit a big one. So he believed that Sabu and Taz was better than their pay-per-view match at Barely Legal a few months earlier. And Sabu, interestingly enough, had just gotten off a plane from Japan. And the report said that Heyman was also thrilled with Raven versus Dreamer and said he would compare that to any main event match in any promotion. So just great stuff. The only other thing, Jeff, I'll say is Raven and Dreamer would link up both in the WWE and TNA years later. So for those of you that are curious about some of those matches and angles, you can certainly find them online. So Jeff, tell us what Meltzer thought of this match.
Yeah, we shared a little bit from the Torch, and we like trying to, yeah, I'd say, find the experts and, you know, just the people that kind of published at the time. So I'll quote here that Meltzer said, the biggest angle perhaps ever in ECW took place on 6-7 at the ECW arena where Jerry Lawler debuted to a thunderous heel reaction. Lawler's crowd pop for his monologue is where he, Sabu, and Rob Van Dam destroyed several ECW wrestlers with chair shots. It was said to be perhaps the loudest in the history of the promotion and certainly loudest for any incident in the arena where a woman wasn't getting pile-driven, choke-slammed, or power-bombed by a man.
That's aged well.
It puts it in perspective there that what the fans wanted. So Meltzer went on, Dreamer versus Raven for the final time had a lot of heat for the near falls. Actually, nearly every fall, near fall, was a DDT, but the crowd popped big for the kickouts. At the same time, even though this was about as good a match as it could have been, Raven didn't exactly look up to WCW caliber when it came to what he did in the ring. The angle with Lawler was great. So there were no stars for this match because it wasn't on pay-per-view, but it was just a great match. I think overall his call of the atmosphere is right, but I think we got to give Raven way more credit than the Observer does.
Yeah, hold on, Jeff. I first want to address this whole Meltzer saying that Raven wasn't WCW caliber line. So what was WCW caliber, Dave? You know, he wasn't a damn cruiserweight. He was a great character, a great promo, and he obviously did well enough in the ring to have the crowd in the palm of his hand to work an awesome match when they knew he was leaving the promotion. So what I don't understand about Big Dave's assessment here is he acknowledges the crowd went nuts, yet he says Raven's work rate wasn't WCW caliber. Who gives a shit? Look, Jeff, when we watch these matches and we ultimately give our payoff score, I care a lot more about how fans react than what chain wrestling sequences took place. So before I get more pissed off, I want to remind everyone how we do things here on The Payoff. We don't rank the match just for in-ring quality, but we look at a variety of things to give a 1 to 10 payoff score. We look at the build. We look at the commentary, the crowd, you know, how it falls into things like in historical perspective, right? Just a whole bunch of different things, not just the maneuvers the two guys were doing in the ring for 15 minutes. So there's no major formula for this. It's just what Jeff and I think, and it's our show, so we get to make the rules. Now, as a reminder, Jeff and I do not discuss these in advance, so I don't know what his payoff score was, but Jeff, I'll share with you what mine is. I'm giving this one an 8.5. Now, the major reason why I love this is it had this massive build with this continuing theme that Tommy Dreamer couldn't win. So anytime you have a lengthy build and a major blow-off match like this, it's hard to screw up. And this was fantastic, and it obviously delivered. So the match moved at a great pace, nonstop action the entire time. Both guys beat the shit out of each other. From a business standpoint, they did a good job of getting Dreamer over, and then they seamlessly led you into a new major storyline that would kept ECW hot all summer long, rather than just dwelling on the fact that the big star and former champion was headed to the rival WCW. Now, since our payoff score is more than just what happened in the ring, I also want to recognize the killer angle following the match. And to Paul Heyman's point, just an incredible hour-long stretch of professional wrestling. Now, Raven brought up something that I hadn't thought about, and I firmly believe would have made this match better. Okay? What I think would have made this match better is if Raven would have gone over. Now, hear me out. My only knock is that it was a bit predictable, right? The fans knew Raven was headed to WCW. It felt like the fans knew this all along. They were along for the ride. They knew they were going to get these guys to beat each other up for 10 to 15 minutes, but ultimately you knew the guy that was staying with the company was going to go over. So oddly enough, you know, you think the payoff, the good guy wins it, the big blow-off match, yay. I actually think it would have been even better if there would have been a big surprise finish, which would have been Raven winning. So I'm giving it an 8.5. I loved it. Jeff, what do you have, buddy?
Yeah, I went with an 8 on this one. You and I both talk a lot about just this unscripted kind of real life stories being woven into what's happening is when a lot of times wrestling can be the best. You and I, we text each other and joke about how if we like see something on the news or, you know, some report and just one of the wrestling websites that, you know, if something's happening in real life, we can expect to see it on TV in the coming weeks. And so no matter what you call it, like this was reality era long before that was ever a thing. The crowd was hot from start to finish because they knew who they were supposed to hate and why they were supposed to hate them. And there was zero question about that fact. And so they knew that what was playing out in real life was also playing out in the ring, and they just ate it up. And so no matter what you could have tried to do, you couldn't have scripted it any better. So, Tom, final thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say it again. I love talking to Raven. I enjoyed his character as a performer. You know, as he said in the interview, he worked really hard at developing the character and then being the character. I think a lot of these ECW guys in this era just had such distinct characters, and they didn't deviate from them. So you think of the Shane Douglas, Taz, Sandman, Sabu, RVD. They all lived their gimmick, and I mean that complimentary, which is, you know, they just carried themselves in such distinct ways. And when you had a roster full of guys that were super strong and unique characters, you know, versus a lot of times today, what you see, which is guys that all look the same, dress the same, act the same, work the same, you know, it's hard to describe who Seth Rollins is or Roman Reigns is or Finn Balor is. You can't actually describe them. But I ask you who Raven is or Tommy Dreamer or Sandman, and you can explain in detail who these guys are, who those characters are. So when you have these deep and unique characters, then you put them into these incredible storylines and you get this conflict. Man, Dreamer and Raven, Sabu and Taz, Raven and Sandman. It's just awesome, dude. Just absolutely great stuff. So yeah, Jeff, big takeaway from today's episode, The Payoff, was, you know, the importance of having a unique roster of characters and then really building to something. So the only other thing I'm going to say, Jeff, before you take us to the finish, Raven was an absolute class act on his way out of ECW. You know, you see the beating he took. You see what he did to put Dreamer over. He didn't have to do that. He had a big contract waiting for him in Atlanta. So the guy's a class act and obviously was a phenomenal guest. And I cannot wait for us to have him back here on The Payoff. So overall, Jeff, this is why I love pro wrestling. Payoffs like this one. Take us home.
I went out on his back. You can't fault him for that. Absolutely. So we got to thank Raven just again for joining us. You can find him on Twitter. He's at The Raven Effect. And you can also hear every week on his podcast, which is The Raven Effect. So we want to remind everyone again about our newly launched Patreon, patreon.com/payoffpod. $10 gets you the monthly bonus matches, you know, polls to help us select the bonus match, and of course, the after show. So again, that's patreon.com/payoffpod. And if you like what you're hearing, of course, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, whatever you're using, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever you like. Make sure to give us 5 stars no matter where you're listening. Tell your friends, family, just everyone you know. You know, the more support we have, the more content we can bring to you, and that's exactly what we want to do. So, of course, like and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Payoff Pod. We love responding to our fans, so you can always find us there. And so, Tom, I know you are the big ECW fan, so I will let you close it out.
Yeah, thank you for joining us on what I thought was an awesome episode. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you being here. We can't wait to see you again next week. So for Jeff and I, this is another edition of The Payoff.